Okay, welcome back. Our second half tonight with Dr. Henry Nyman. A couple of quickies. As I mentioned, Henry sent me a story last hour. A super spreader in Italy, 38-year-old male, has infected at least 15, including healthcare workers. This is how it's going to go. And the other story here that caught my eye, and I haven't mentioned it yet, finally, reports are beginning to come out of Vancouver, British Columbia, which is over 60% Chinese. Now, the story I saw said that virtually all the Chinese restaurants are closed down now. The ripples are becoming stronger all around the world from this. The supply chain is broken. It's not going to be repaired. It could take a year to get back up to steam if the virus were to evaporate tomorrow, which isn't going to happen. Skyrocketing rates in South Korea. We haven't gotten much. Maybe Henry has more on Iran, which, according to one of its senior health authorities, made the statement that it appears to be circulating in all major Iranian cities. How did that happen? A lot of this, the dynamic of this is extraordinary, and we've been working together, Henry and I, for, I don't know, over 15 years now, and it's just great to have someone with his expertise to come in here day after day to offer his professionalism and his analyses of this crisis, which is exactly what it is. Hi, Henry. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be back. But I think today actually is the tipping point, and the evidence for that's in several different areas. And I thought I'd start out just doing a reminder, since it's the 17th anniversary of the day that the super spreader in Hong Kong actually checked into the Metropole Hotel, which really set off the international spread back then. And now there's a lot of activity that's very reminiscent of what it was like 17 years ago, actually a little bit less than 17 years ago, because the effects of him checking into the Metropole Hotel took 2 or 3 weeks before it became apparent that the virus had spread out of Asia into, or at least out of Guangdong province.
I remember, Henry, excuse me, I remember you telling that story about what happened in that hotel and how that guy vomited and how it took off from, just a remarkable story. We worked together back then. That's 17 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, so so anyway, just to kind of set the stage back then, 17 years ago, there really wasn't a whole lot of information on the outbreak. There's a kind of a newsletter called ProMed that had contacts in Guangdong province and was putting out reports, private reports that they had received on a mystery disease that was causing pneumonia and severe pneumonia in a large number of residents of Guangdong province and multiple cities, and the government actually was denying that anything was happening at the time. And this time, 17 years ago, that was really about all the evidence that there was. What was happening was definitely flying under the radar and wasn't being reported at all. But a physician who had been treating patients in Guangdong province came to Hong Kong to attend a wedding. And it was 17 years ago today. He met his brother-in-law. They went shopping. He actually was symptomatic. He had started developing symptoms on the 15th of February. So it was 6 days later, and he still felt well enough to go on a shopping spree with his brother-in-law. Then he checked into the hotel, and then his health kind of started to deteriorate. And he did end up vomiting on the ninth floor. He was in room 911, and when it dried, they kind of vacuumed it up, and that kind of put the virus into the air. And many people on the seventh floor got infected, and others in the building, probably from the elevator, also got infected. And then he checked out the next day. So the 22nd, he checked out of the hotel. He then went to the one of the hospitals in Hong Kong and said that he thought he was very ill, and he ended up dying. Mm-hmm. His brother-in-law ended up dying. Right. And a couple days later, the first patient, tourist who was infected by him, a 78-year-old woman from Toronto, flew out of Hong Kong back to Toronto. She ended up getting sick while she was at home. She ended up dying at home, but she infected her son. And then he went to the hospital in Toronto, and that kind of set things off there. And then there was a businessman that went to Hanoi, and same thing happened there. And there were three sisters that went to Singapore, and the same thing happened there. And then a somebody who was visiting somebody at the hotel went to a hospital in Hong Kong, and he was treated with a nebulizer, and that kind of aerosolized the virus, and residents were on rounds, and they came to his room, and all the residents that saw him that morning ended up getting infected, and others on the ward were infected. And then this all started to be reported, well into March. And then it was a little while after these reports of these outbreaks of these various cities outside of mainland China started to show up in media reports. And it was still a mystery disease at the time. It wasn't really clear what was causing the disease, but the link to the Metropole Hotel then came out in March, and it was that all of these index cases that were at these different locations all had stayed at the Metropole Hotel, and all had been exposed to the physician. And then it was clear that it was a major issue. The various labs started sequencing the virus. The virus had a mutation, a 29 nucleotide deletion, and then all of these international cases all had the same 29 nucleotide deletion, and they basically would all trace back to the same physician at the Metropole Hotel. And it was kind of off and running, and tracings of what was happening really zeroed in on the idea that there were these super spreaders that infected a large number of people, and they generally ended up with very severe illnesses. Initially, it was infecting a lot of the healthcare workers at each of these medical centers that treated the initial cases. And that kind of set the stage. There were, I think, 778 or so deaths from SARS, and there were about 8,000 that were diagnosed with the more aggressive form. The case definition then was that they had this atypical pneumonia, that it was severe acute respiratory syndrome. So it was for severe disease. It wasn't just somebody that was asymptomatic or had a mild case of the virus, virus infection. It was individuals that had pneumonia and had been hospitalized. And when they calculated the case fatality rate, especially once they had outcomes, it was really based on those that met the case definition. So these would be people that were hospitalized, did have pneumonia, and about 10% of those people ended up dying. And then several years later, there was a similar disease called MERS, which is Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which was in the Middle East. And both of these viruses were kind of the same family. They were class 2B, and they both could be found, related viruses could be found in bats. And in the Middle East, the intermediate host, which was a host that was more likely to interact with people than the bats, were camels. So went from bats to camels to people in the Middle East. And in Asia, the intermediate host was generally civet cats, which are sold in wet markets. So they went from bats to civet cats to humans. And for the current outbreak, it looks like, again, it's bats. And the intermediate host may very well be this scaled version of anteaters that have coronaviruses that are very closely related to the one that's in humans. In fact, there's one sequence that's been submitted for publication. The sequence itself hasn't come out yet, but it's 99% identical to the one that's circulating. One that did recently come out that I basically showed that sequence, that came out a couple days ago. It's from Guangdong province, and it was it was 90% identical. And then there's a bat sequence that's about 96%. So this virus, just like the SARS virus and just like the MERS virus, has a reservoir in bats and ends up infecting an intermediate host, and that's how it ended up getting into the people. But now that it's in the people, it's causing problems somewhat similar to SARS, but at a much higher level. Today, 17 years ago, there were 300 cases of SARS, and there were five deaths. And then it was after the Metropole Hotel that the virus got to be a little bit more virulent and more easily transmitted, and there were more super spreaders that kind of were involved with some of these major events. The Metropole Hotel is the most widely known one, but there was this Amoy Gardens where one person ended up through the ventilation system of a residential complex, ended up infecting like 300 people. And and then there was an airline flight that went from Hong Kong to Taiwan, and that really established the virus in Taiwan. But what's happening here is kind of signaled by a couple conference calls that were that WHO did this morning, and then CDC did early afternoon, and they were really designed to be updates, especially WHO. They kind of give a daily update, and the WHO's press conference was probably the one that was at least for the reporters there. I mean, generally the way these work is they kind of make a brief presentation and give an update, and then reporters ask questions, trying to make news, but usually end up just getting clarifications. They're very reluctant to kind of break new news at these press conferences, but other than what's in their prepared remarks. And so WHO was reiterating the fact that there's a window of opportunity to get a hold of the virus and get it under control. But, today they said that window was rapidly closing. And then reporters kind of questioned whether it was closing or whether it was already closed. And WHO tried to maintain that there was still a chance to contain the virus. And the two topics that really came up the most in the WHO press conference was really the Diamond Princess outbreak, as well as what was going on in Iran.
What was the name of that ship again, Henry? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. What was that?
The Diamond Princess.
You won't say
not
it.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
But in any event, they did mention
out of the news,
ship.
By the way. I haven't seen that name in the news in a couple of days.
Well,
it's
that's
not there.
Because they basically told everybody to get off the ship.
Yep.
And that the news is kind of coming out. That's part of what the CDC press conference was about, so I'll get to that shortly. But they mentioned the Diamond Princess in WHO, but they actually focused more on Iran. And the reason they were focused on Iran was the rapid rise that just a couple of days ago there were officially no cases in Iran. And then there were two fatalities that were cited. And when a country starts out with fatalities, that's a very bad sign. That's a sign that the virus has been there for a while. And they really haven't been reporting it. And then all of a sudden, there's two fatalities. So they started out with two fatalities, and then that was followed by three more cases. And so all of a sudden, they had five. And then they reported two more fatalities. And another series of cases. And so the four fatalities really made Iran number one in fatalities outside of China. No other country has reported four fatalities. I don't think any country's actually reported three fatalities. All the fatalities in countries outside of China have been zero, one, or two. And all of a sudden, Iran went right to the head of the class, so to speak, and they had four fatalities already that were kind of official. And they were talking about four fatalities at WHO that they had got, you know, some confirmation that was indeed the case. And there was also the general feeling that if they had four fatalities, then they certainly had more than initially, I think it was five, then it went up to, it was something like 14 cases or something along those lines. But with four fatalities, there was clearly more than 14 cases. And various residents or people, at least on Twitter, were indicating that many cities were involved. Actually, Reuters came out with a report and listed about five or six different cities that had cases, and indicated that there may have been up to 60 cases. And then others said, well, if you got four deaths, you probably have a lot more than 60 cases. And then came the word that there were exports. And when the exports started coming in, first there was one report yesterday that in British Columbia, they had their, sixth case. And this case had not been in China, but had been in Iran. So Iran came to light yesterday as being the source of the British Columbia case. And then today there was a report that the first case in Lebanon was a woman who had also come from Iran. And she had come from the city called Qom, Q-O-M. And there is kind of like a Mecca version, except for Shiites, I guess. And it's they have people come there from all over the world, you know, essentially, and especially from many different countries in the Middle East, and including Iraq is one of the countries that would have more travelers to this pilgrimage. And The one from Lebanon had been confirmed. There were two others with her that were symptomatic and, you know, were likely to be confirmed. And so this would have been the first three cases in Lebanon, all coming from Iran, and the case in British Columbia coming from Iran. So it was clear that, you know, there were, you know, quite a few people in Iran who were infected. And there were some reports, local reports that were coming out that hadn't been verified yet, but they were saying that virtually every major city in Iran had cases. And there was some
That's what I said earlier. That's a shock, that statement. That's quite a surprise.
Right,
we have heard nothing,
right,
as you know, about anything in Iran until they let it out.
Right.
Boom.
But apparently this started with workers from China who were working in Iran, and they brought the virus in, and that got it circulating in Iran below the radar. It wasn't being reported by anybody. That literally Iran had officially or even unofficially, it had zero cases as of maybe 3 days ago, and there might have been rumors and there might have been denials of those rumors, but there wasn't anything really convincing. That it wasn't really on anybody's radar screen, and all of a sudden there was Iran. And I mean, when I first saw the two deaths, I thought that might have been a MERS cases, because that's what happened in Saudi Arabia. They had reported.
Sure, got it.
Novel coronaviruses, and, you know, they were translation issues, and they weren't really coming out and saying COVID. You know, they were saying a novel coronavirus that was infecting X, Y, and Z. And then it ended up eventually coming out that the novel coronavirus was MERS, which, especially for Saudi Arabia, it wasn't surprising. The vast majority of the MERS cases that have been confirmed and deaths also are in Saudi Arabia. So MERS cases in Saudi Arabia have been going on since 2012, and that wouldn't have been news. But COVID cases were some in UAE that had been reported, and those had an origin from China. So that kind of explained what was going on in UAE. But that was really about it. Israel has a case now, but that's really from the ship, the princess, your corona,
yes,
princess.
The corona princess. Now you know what,
right,
I'm talking about.
Right. So that was Israel's first case, and they're kind of funny on exactly how they're dividing those up, whether they're a case from Japan, because they were infected in Japan and they were actually being treated in Japan, or whether they really had to come to their country of origin and then be identified there and being treated there. So if they did that, they kind of assigned it to the country of origin. If they were still over in Japan, they initially assigned it to Japan, and then they assigned it to the ship. The ship had its own column that it was just that ship. That
it
they
did.
Had.
It was like a floating country. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Hold on right there. Yeah, we have to pause at the top of the hour. We'll go through the bottom of the hour break to bring all of you out there as much as we possibly can. There is a tremendous amount going on, and much more just around the corner. Hold on, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Hour number three tonight. Dr. Henry Nyman is here with us again as we have planned this hour and a half special on Friday to try to keep at least somewhat of pace with what's going on. I'm going to read a very short piece from the New York Post, which is a good paper. I think what they put out is often quite credible. It's entitled Whistleblower Doctors, and these are doctors in Wuhan, according to the story, say that coronavirus reinfection is real and even deadlier than the first go-round. So what they're saying is you don't have conferred immunity if you survive it. You can still become infected again, and it's much worse. Chinese doctors sounding the alarm on the coronavirus say the illness could be even deadlier for patients who catch it again. This is according to a new report. The whistleblowing physicians working to fight the virus in Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, revealed that medically cleared patients have been getting reinfected. This reported by the Taiwan News. Here's a quote now. It's highly possible to get infected a second time, end quote, said one of the doctors who declined to be identified. He told that to the Taiwan News. The physician said that medication used to treat the virus can have negative side effects on patients' heart tissue, making them more susceptible to cardiac arrest. Well, whether it's medication or a second round of the virus, I think you can just kind of flip a coin. They're using, I guess, antiretrovirals, HIV medications on some people, and I think that's what the doctor's alluding to. A few people recovered from the first time they were infected by virtue of their own immune systems, but the meds they use are damaging their heart tissue, and when they get it a second time, the antibodies in the body don't help, but makes it worse, and they die a sudden death from heart failure. The doctor added that the virus has, quote, outsmarted all of us, end quote, since he says it's able to hide symptoms for up to 24 days, which contradicts current guidance that the incubation period is 14 days. What's more, the infected patients often return false negatives before eventually being diagnosed with the illness. Now, here's the kicker. It can fool the test kit. There were cases that they found that the CAT scan, the CT scan, shows both lungs are fully infected, but the tests came back negative, PCR tests, four times. The fifth test came back positive. So that's very concerning. All right, we have much on the table here, Henry. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, actually, one of the things they asked about at WHO was the use of steroids to treat the patients. And WHO didn't really come out and say that was a bad idea, but they kind of suggested that it might be. And I'm not sure if the steroid use has to do with any of those additional medical issues. There's also some data on antibodies, especially if the strain changes, that the antibodies against one strain may not be that effective at inhibiting the other strain, but it may facilitate the other strain entering the cells via the antibodies binding to the virus and getting the virus into the cell more easily. And there was that type of phenomenon for dengue, and that led some of the vaccine resistance because they were vaccinated against one strain of dengue and it gave protection, but then that left them vulnerable to another strain. And then some groups just kind of extrapolated that to all vaccines and argued that they shouldn't be taking any vaccines for anything. But there has been a paper that's in press that actually shows that type of antibody-enhanced infection for coronavirus And that may have some bearing on the report that that she just read. And you know, there clearly are videos of people suddenly dying in Wuhan, and the argument there was that it was the antibodies, or not the antibodies, the virus was attacking the heart, and that was leading to sudden
right.
death. And
there are only a couple of pieces that discuss the virus targeting other areas of the body, like the digestive tract, the heart, the brain. They always talk about lungs and pneumonia, but apparently it can overwhelm other major sectors of the physiology.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, there do seem to be, that's what I was saying with the viral loads, and in areas where there's a lot of virus, there seems to be more complications as far as the severity of the disease as well as the deaths. And so the deaths were part of what happened with WHO in Iran, that did seem to signal a major change, at least in the reporters' eyes, because after the presentation is made, then they're open for questions from the reporters. And and there were a couple that were zeroing in on Iran and questioning whether the window was closing or the window was closed. When they pushed and said, well, what are you going to do if the window is closed? And they said they were going to fall back on, you know, scientists and the various approaches that were in development as far as drugs to treat it or vaccines, although vaccines are like a year away. But they'd be using, you know, modern techniques to try to, you know, give some assistance to the battle against the virus itself. And but there was definitely a sense from the WHO that that the Iran outbreak had A, taken everybody by surprise, and B, probably more because the deaths were already known. I mean, I had a report that I sent yesterday that indicated that there were 9 deaths already, and then another report had 2 more that didn't include those 9, so it said there were 11 deaths already. And, you know, so they were kind of getting over, you know, very concerned when there were 4 deaths, that there were 11 deaths, which very well may be, and that might get confirmed the next day or two, then the argument will be that there's even more viruses circulating there. And the concern is that it's it'll spread very easily from in the Middle East. And actually, the real concern is that it already has spread in the Middle East. And, you know, they really weren't testing people that came from Iran. They were testing people that came from China. And it may really have, you know, zipped in under the radar, especially if there's a lot of traffic with pilgrims going to these mass gatherings.
Oh, yeah.
And coming in and out, they would seed all those countries that are adjacent to Iran with infected pilgrims. And that's probably what happened in Lebanon, where they have 1 confirmed and 2 suspects, so they may have 3 cases, whereas yesterday they had 0. So these would be the first 3 cases, and they would all be from the same city in Iran. And the test kits have, you know, just recently gone out. So, you know, had these same people appeared 3-4 weeks ago, they really wouldn't have even had the kit to do the test. And so, you know, there wouldn't be any likelihood. You know, it would be a very low likelihood that they would be detected. So
right.
Iran had a significant effect on the WHO meeting. And then a few hours later, the CDC had called a teleconference. And the CDC teleconference was focused on the cruise ships. And they you know, put out a statement from the Department of State essentially saying that you know, this rescue that was done for the Diamond Princess was an exception that, you know, travelers shouldn't assume that if they go on a cruise ship and get into a similar situation that the U.S. is going to send planes and rescue them, that they really need to be aware of the fact that they could get stranded on a cruiser. And so they issued that alert, and then they mentioned that there was travel warnings to Japan and I think Hong Kong. It might have been South Korea now. I'll get to South Korea, but South Korea has gotten out of control by the hour and based upon a super story. Well, since I mentioned it, I might as well skip to it. I mean, I told you yesterday that it was up to 200 confirmed cases, and the last you had seen was 100. Mm-hmm. Well, their report today is up to 346. So,
and 142 new infections.
Right. And so it's most of them seem to be associated with a super spreader at this church service that may involve thousands of people, and they're doing the same type of thing where they're basically calling off teacher gatherings and shutting down schools and shutting down shops and kind of closing things up in the general area in South Korea. And so that's another indication that, A, there's a super spreader, B, that it's getting a lot of people, and C, that some of the people are in severe condition. So speaking of severe condition,
Sam, the industrial impact is already being felt there. Samsung closing down some operations at least. This is bringing these countries to their knees. And Korea appears to be right in the crosshairs.
Right. And the same thing's happened with Japan. I mean, I'm sorry, with Iran. They are talking of essentially shutting down the town where the pilgrimage is.
QOM. It's a holy city there. Com.
Right.
I think.
So that's a concern. And then they were also moving paramedics into Tehran because of outbreaks there, and trying to get that under control. And
the big pilgrimage is to the Hajj. They call it the Hajj. That's where you got that you mentioned earlier. That's July 28th. So
and that's down in Saudi Arabia, though. So you know how much activity there'll be. You know, it sounds like there'll be a lot more damage before ever get around to that.
Agreed.
Because it sounds like Iran is in serious trouble if there's outbreaks in all of these cities. And like I said, there's probably cases throughout the Middle East already, and they just haven't realized it because they didn't have the kits, and they really weren't thinking that if they have somebody with atypical pneumonia, they figure that it's, you know, atypical pneumonia from something else because they haven't been to China, you know. But these are in Iran, it's community spread for sure, and it sounds like there's a lot of cases, but it also sounds like it might have just suddenly exploded. That they gave another death. It was a doctor, I believe, who was in the hospital bed. So they had pictures of him alive, and I think they were
it was a doctor
yesterday, and and that he died since then.
Right,
so some of these cases have just died, and And so it may be that it's getting to that level where it was kind of under the radar. There were pneumonia cases, some were admitted in the hospital, and then recently some of them started to deteriorate and die, and that kind of, you know, set off one alarm bell. And then these other reports started coming out indicating that they were widespread. So
how about this one?
I did mention, how about
which one? 10 towns in northern Italy are now on full lockdown.
Yeah, that's the other super spreader. And you were kind of jumping ahead a little bit.
But I'm sorry.
This is a 38-year-old. And and indeed, I think there's 15 or 16 people that he's infected, including, I think, 5 or 8 healthcare workers at the hospital where he was treated. And, you know, that sounds an awful lot like the super spreaders from SARS that got things rolling. And, you know, it's not clear these sequences from these super spreaders. The milder one, the sequence was out, one of the sequences in France from the businessman that got infected in Singapore. But in that case, it was a lot of people that were identified, but they were all either very mild or asymptomatic. I mean, he was asymptomatic, and the only reason that cluster was identified is because he had heard that there was a case at the meeting that he was at, and then that got him to go to the doctor, and then he was diagnosed. And but he was, at most, he had a mild case. Maybe by the time he got back to England, he had a mild case, but most of the time when he was in the meetings in Singapore as well as in France, he was asymptomatic. And when these other people that got infected were with him, and when he met up with them in France, they became infected. And I'm pretty certain he was still asymptomatic then. So he would be a good example that the virus can transmit and can transmit to quite a few people, but they kind of have a milder version, that the sequence wasn't that remarkable when it was released from one of the, it wasn't from him, it was actually from one of the people that was infected in France. But some of these other super spreaders is really not out yet, so it's not really clear if there's anything unusual about the virus in South Korea or the virus in Iran. And the Iran situation just seems that it's more mature. That it's not that you just have people that are infected and they're the first cases are appearing.
Mm-hmm.
There are cases that are dying and other cases that are
it sounds like anyway to be. They were really keeping a lid on this for some time while it continued to.
Yeah, because that's what everybody expects as soon as you hear that the first two cases are deaths. And mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing would happen with like H5N1, that it was like you didn't hear about anybody hospitalized and then mm-hmm. dying. The first thing you heard was that they had just died. And that's usually an indication that surveillance is either very bad or not very forthcoming or transparent, that they knew they had cases, but they really weren't telling anybody. But in any event, going to the CDC, the CDC called it because of the cruise line situation. And they announced that they were going to change the way they report the cases in the U.S. now. So that was news, but that wasn't from a question. That was what they were planning on saying at the conference.
And how so? How are they going to change the way they report the cases?
They're,
you have a case or you don't.
Well, yeah, but they got you've got a case in the United States or you've got a case on a cruise ship or in an evacuation. So they're essentially saying that the cases that they evacuated from Wuhan and the cases mm-hmm. that they evacuated from the Diamond Princess would be their own category. So they would keep tabs on those. And
70 in California infected.
And they would be in one group, right? And then they would have the ones that were infected in the United States. That would be the second group. So on their website, they do have them split up that way. And they have 18 right now is what they have listed from the cruise ship. And another 3 from Wuhan. So they've got 21 cases that are in the United States, but infected elsewhere and brought to the United States by the, you know, chartered airlines. And then they have, what's the number? I think the number is 14 now in the United States, because they took away the two that were in Southern California and the one that was in Texas, because those came from the evacuations of Wuhan. And so they're just dividing them up. They think the ones in the U.S. better represent the case situation in the U.S., whereas the other ones represent Americans that were infected elsewhere. And they didn't even say what they're doing with the Americans that are like in Japan. I mean, they would be another category where they were identified as being positives in Japan or being treated in Japan. So they're Americans, and eventually they're going to come back to the United States. But for right now, they're in hospitals or in some cases, apparently hostels, because they don't have room for them yet in the hospital.
Right.
They will move into that.
Did CDC in its press conference today, Henry, mention the issue of the defective test kits?
Yeah, the kits came up also. The plan, you know, number one was to distribute the kits, and they said that they were still undergoing evaluations, and sometimes they run into these types of validation issues, but that they were still testing them at the CDC and the CDC in Atlanta, and that those samples don't have a backlog, so they're really not running into a delay, that they test them as soon as they receive them. And so, I mean, there's the delay in the time it takes to pack it up and put
right.
an overnight shipment. But once
here's
it
a
gets
little,
to Atlanta,
a little note
they
that,
process it right away.
Did they mention this? And this is a news story from Politico. Problems with a coronavirus test developed by the CDC have delayed the Trump administration's efforts, the CDC's efforts, to expand screening to state and local public health labs. More than 2 weeks after the FDA granted permission to distribute the CDC test kits nationwide. Here's the kicker. Only three of the more than 100 public health labs across the country have verified the CDC test kits for use. This is according to the Association of Public Health Labs. So three out of over 100 say that the kits are good and they'll work. And then I got this story from Hawaii, which says that, hold on, where did it go? This is another important one. Well, basically it said that the word from Hawaii is virtually nothing. Why? Because they aren't testing people in Hawaii. Why? Because they have no tests to give them.
Right.
So Hawaii is screwed.
Well, they can. You know, I don't know how much longer the shipping is because they're further out. But they can pack them up and send them to Atlanta, and they'll get tested. It's not as convenient, and there's a shipping delay to get them from point A to point B. But the idea of the kits where it is going to be easier for the local labs to do it, and they basically have a validation test, so they have to take the kits and they're given samples, and they have to be able to reproducibly identify positives as being positives and negatives as being negatives, and so they have to have some predetermined accuracy in using the kits, and once they demonstrate that proficiency, then they are accredited to actually do the testing on their own. And apparently there was a problem with one of the tests, and a lot of the, or it sounds like most of the labs failed because that test didn't give consistent results. And so they're to kind of back to the drawing board and giving them a new set of kits. And then as far as the screening by the CDC announced that they were going to be doing surveillance to look for community transmission by taking right. advantage of the network they have for influenza and then providing kits there. And they announced that last week, but they were asked where that stood and were those in place. And they said, well, the kits are there, but they're going to start doing the screenings next week. So they're not really doing the surveillance at those five cities yet for picking up the COVID and people that have flu-like symptoms but are negative
see,
on the flu test.
The bigger story here for me, and just in terms of Hawaii, they've got no test kits. They've got no ability to screen. And that one hot case they had was there for 7 to 10 days on Maui and then on Waikiki. They're not able to test anyone. They don't know what's going on in Hawaii.
And he's already infected at least two and probably more than that in Japan. After he returned. Mm-hmm. So he
was a hot
one. Well, there they've got a kit. So yeah, he definitely has contacts that are positive in Japan, including his wife. His wife is positive, and she wasn't symptomatic while they were in Hawaii. And so the chances are that her infection is due to him. And and so she's positive. And then there's a couple other acquaintances of his that are positive, and one of hers that is positive. So the virus that the two of them have, assuming it's likely that his wife is infected with the same virus he has, that virus has infected a minimum of three people in Japan and probably more than that. And whether they've infected people in Hawaii, is an open question, because he was symptomatic while he was there. And he did wear a mask on the plane, but
here's the Star Advertiser in Honolulu, February the 21st. Headline: No one in Hawaii has been tested for coronavirus as health officials wait for kits from the CDC. They're running blind there. They may have dozens of cases. They don't know.
Right. I mean, they still have the option of taking a sample and sending it to the CDC for testing. So, I mean, they have that. With Hawaii, it would be less convenient than other countries or other states, because they... It would be a longer distance to ship it. Although I don't know how big a difference that makes. It might make like a day.
FedEx overnight is pretty good.
The hard part is getting the samples and packing it up and shipping it out. And Hawaii might be a slightly longer delay.
When they do get their kits, they're going to be in for a rude surprise. There's a lot of Chinese and Japanese there.
Well, that's the general issue, is that, and that's part of the reason they are planning on doing this community surveillance, because they simply haven't been testing those people. They were initially doing Wuhan, and then I think they might have expanded it somewhat to cover all of China. But in the meantime, there's community transmission in multiple countries now. Even if you throw Iran out, which is brand new, but there's lots of cases, like over 300 now in South Korea. All of the recent cases in Hong Kong have been local transmission. Virtually all of the recent cases in Japan have been, so has Singapore. So all of those countries would be sending people to the United States, and the number of positives there, the number of lab confirmed cases is just, you know, the tip of the iceberg on any of these countries. Right. It's not like everybody's getting picked up and being tested. There are people that are asymptomatic. They have no idea that they have the virus, and others are mildly affected. Go ahead.
This is another important one. This has to do with people allegedly voluntarily self-quarantining themselves and then turning up infected later. I have a real problem believing a lot of that these people just suddenly decide to self-quarantine after they've returned, say, here from China. One person came from China on February the 2nd, and then on the 21st, they announced that the person is infected. All right? So here's another story, though. We talked about this. The comedian who was booked to work as entertainment on the Westerdam, he decided he didn't want to stay in the five-star hotel for the quarantine, so he snuck out, got on a plane, flew all the way back to SeaTac, I guess took another plane down to Eugene, and he's back home. And he pronounced himself uninfected and said he was tested, but no, there's no proof of it. So this guy's walking around the community, and the local public health people, apparently, I don't know what they've done or not done, but they certainly haven't put him under quarantine or curtailed him. This guy could easily be another potential spreader. We just don't know. We don't have the tests. We don't have the kits.
Well, they were done in Cambodia, and they did have the test. That's how they got the one positive. But it's not clear how big a deal that is, because to my knowledge, there haven't been any other positives announced, and so they would have.
I know they intercepted
like 185 U.S. citizens that were planning on getting on a plane, and I think they didn't get on the plane. And I'm virtually positive that they won't be allowed on a plane until they, at a minimum, have been tested. And I would think that by now, would have been tested. If anybody was positive, that would have been news. So
we got the story from Wuhan, though, that bothers me, too. I don't know how you feel about it professionally, but if somebody can be a false negative on four PCR tests, and then they run a CAT scan, and his lungs are loaded with virus, and then he's finally positive on the fifth test, what does that tell us about, were these flawed tests that he was given? I don't know. We don't know. They're unanswered questions.
No, I mean, there is some evidence for that. And the question is when that was done. Because the whistleblower had that happen, that he died like last week or so. And he went through multiple negative tests before he was finally positive. I don't recall the exact number, but it wasn't one or two. It was like three or four. And that again may have to do with the timing of that. Because if you recall, when the outbreak started in Wuhan, they initially had 59 positives, but that was based on clinical presentation. And then once they had the kit, the number went down to 41. And then they basically left it at 41 for a while. So it was kind of unchanged, and people were asking, you know, if there's so much activity there, how can there be no new cases? And at that time, there were a few exported cases. So it was kind of like, well, how are they showing up in Singapore or South Korea or Japan? I think it was Japan and Singapore, and wasn't Singapore, it was Thailand. So they were showing up in Thailand and Japan as being positive and coming from Wuhan, and Wuhan was still stuck at 41. And they said they were waiting for a more robust test. So they were indirectly saying that they didn't have a whole lot of confidence in the test
that's
that they
exactly
were using, and they were waiting for a better one. But it's not clear that when they had it in Wuhan, whether they had it for everybody in Wuhan. So they may have had a limited number of tests that they were initially, you know, looking for more people that were linked to the seafood market, and not really doing a whole lot of testing beyond that. And this physician had said that, you know, it was at least three, possibly four or five tests that were negative before he finally got a positive. I mean, he knew he was infected with that virus, and he couldn't, you know, prove it with the test because the test kept on coming up negative. So, you know, what they're reporting in that, I mean, the reports that show up in local media like that really come from scientific something. You know, it's more from, if it's not written up scientifically, it's from somebody that is giving anecdotal kind of reports from the from the front lines. And you know, there could be a significant delay, so these multiple negatives may have been something that was happening in January, and you know, late December, January timeframe, and that might have just been not so much something unusual with the patient, but maybe the test, still they didn't have the robust version yet, and they kept trying because they knew that this person was positive based upon his lungs, and you know, they just figured, well, if they do X, Y, or Z, they can get a positive, and they weren't successful on whether they were taking samples from different sites, and because sometimes what happens is if they're very sick, then that could be at a time where they've been infected long enough that they've cleared the virus from their upper respiratory tract, and you really need to have some type of bronchial lavage or something along those lines where you're getting fluid right out of the lungs. Mm-hmm. And so they could conceivably be negative multiple times because they were really sampling the upper respiratory tract. So when they do that, they get a negative. The lungs are positive because that's where the virus is, in the lungs. And if they're not drawing samples from the lungs, or if they have technical issues on getting a good sample from the lungs, they could conceivably have negatives. I mean, I ran into that personally with H1N1, that I took my daughter and I knew she was positive. And
well, you had it. You had it twice, as I remember.
Right. And I actually, when I took her in, I didn't have it yet. I actually got it the next day when I went to the soccer game because she wasn't there, and I do the stats. So I was there, and I mother, actually she was a doctor of of another patient, she was, you know, coughing away, and I said, what do you think you got? And I don't know, I got whatever my daughter's got. I said, what do you think she's got? She says, I don't know. I said, well, I think she's got swine flu. I think half of the team has swine flu, including my daughter. And she says, well, So I just went to the point, oh, how are you treating it? Oh, we're taking Tamiflu. So, you know, she knew what she had, and I knew what she had. And but the point was that when I was talking to the doctor, when I brought my daughter in, I said, well, you know, she's got the classical symptoms. Half of her soccer team has the virus. You know, a lot of the kids are out of school already, and I'm sure she has swine flu. And he said, well, I'm not so sure. We just had, I don't know, some five cases, and there were classical swine flu, and we took the nasopharyngeal swabs on them, and they were all negative. And they have some type of upper respiratory infection. And I said, I think you just got a swabbing issue, you know, and that didn't go over that big, but I'm sure that was the case. That would have been an example where whoever was doing the swabbing just was not getting a good sample. and they were getting false negatives, because I'm sure those five that had classical swine flu symptoms in October in Pittsburgh, in our area, were definitely swine flu. That there was no way that they were getting five negatives. It just happened to have some upper respiratory tract infection when they ended up following up with serological testing before the vaccine came out, so they could still test for antibodies. And 40% of the samples collected from high school age students that were collected before the vaccine came out were positive for swine flu antibodies. So not necessarily going to be able to pick up everybody that actually had been exposed. Their antibody levels could still be below detection and still had been affected. So the bottom line was that they were testing people that definitely had H1N1, and the test definitely worked if they got a good sample. But if they had a technician that wasn't used to taking nasopharyngeal swabs, they could have come up with negatives. And it's conceivable you could add something like that with COVID, because I'm sure these places were overwhelmed, and they may have been short on technicians, and somebody might have been collecting samples that didn't have that much experience collecting samples, or maybe had experience, but the experience was collecting it improperly, and so they were generating these negatives. They finally got somebody that knew how to take it, do a swab, and then they got a positive. So that's one of the problems with testing, that there's a lot of ways you can get a false negative. And in some cases, like what I had seen here in Pittsburgh, I'm virtually positive. It was as simple as the technique to get the nasopharyngeal swab, because you actually have to go pretty deep. But on top of that, if somebody was very sick and the lungs were full of virus, they could very well have cleared the virus from their upper respiratory tract. And if they could get a good lung sample, then fluid from the lungs, that they would get a positive. But if they were still trying to detect the virus in their upper respiratory tract, they could be getting a negative. So some of this could be the test, some of it could be the technique, and some of it could be, where the virus was and where they were, what kind of samples they were collecting. And those are a lot of variables to try to figure it out. But the idea that somebody that was very sick and had a lot of virus in their lower respiratory tract but was testing negative is not a new story, that's happened with swine flu, and that I'm sure it happened with SARS, and it happened with COVID also, that if you're not sampling where the virus is, you're going to get negative even though the person has
okay
virus.
We got just 5 minutes left. Let me ask you to do this now. Let's just pull back. Let's just rewind this thing and pull back a little bit and look at America, look at the U.S. We've got a big Chinese community in Vancouver, British Columbia, obviously one in Seattle. There's a smaller one in Portland. The big one in San Francisco. There's a very large one in L.A. And yet none of those, which would seem to me to be obvious targets to look at, none of those seem to be reporting any active infections. And I'm wondering out loud if those communities are so tightly knit that they know they've got people sick and they know there's nothing that a hospital can really do, so they're keeping them in their own communities quietly at home, wherever they are, and not saying anything. I told you that I have a friend in San Gabriel, which is 80% Chinese. He said everybody, all the Chinese are wearing masks all the time.
Right.
And it would just suggest to me that they know something that the world doesn't about. They got people coming and going all the time to China, or they did.
Right, but I mean, that's why they'd be wearing masks. They don't have to know somebody is definitely positive, but they'd know.
That's right.
Now,
that's true.
And,
but it's a possibility.
And in China, everybody's wearing masks. So I'm sure that their relatives in China say, "Well, you got to wear a mask. Everybody's wearing a mask here." And you know,
I don't have an answer. I just know there are a lot of Chinese and no cases.
They could say exactly what you're saying, which is people come and go all the time. There's definitely virus here, and it's all over China. And you know, there's almost certainly people coming in. And but that's some of the under surveillance type stuff that, you know, you cited how many people were under self quarantine and under surveillance.
Almost 6,000 in California, I think. Yeah.
Right, and that's what that surveillance is for.
I would think so.
Really, people that have come from China that they tell them do essentially
voluntary
quarantine, and to take their temperature on a regular basis, and
which can mean nothing.
I think they call in or they're called, and that's the surveillance they're under. They basically are recording their temperature on a regular basis. Now the problem with that, of course, is that you can have the virus and not have a temperature. I mean, that's what these asymptomatic cases are.
That's, right.
That's what they were doing on the Diamond Princess. The main symptom they were looking for, I think, was fever, because you know, the Abels both had a cough, and they had a very pronounced cough, and
yes,
they were not tested for that cough, and
nope.
the personnel there, the medical personnel, were aware of it. At least, you know, as long as what he said on the video was accurate, he said that, you know, they had medical personnel call on them and say they heard that they weren't feeling that well, and they interviewed them, and they heard them coughing. I mean, they couldn't go more than a minute without coughing. So, I mean, they were constantly coughing. And they would have, you know, medical personnel would have picked up on a cough and say, well, how long have you had this cough, and how frequent is it? And unless they lied, they would have said, well, you've had the cough for 3, 4, 5 days. You know, it was over a long period of time. I saw the videos.
Yes, it was.
They were never tested.
I'm afraid.
They were only tested when it was their turn, when they started testing the 70-year-olds who were theoretically asymptomatic. That's when they came by and collected a sample from both of them. That was at the very end of the testing process. So their criteria for, you know, being a concern is a fever. And in fact, I think it wasn't just a fever. I think they had to be 1 degree centigrade above normal, which is about two degrees above normal Fahrenheit, for them to be considered to have a temperature. And the same thing happened with H1N1. I mean, there were 50% of the H1N1 cases didn't have a fever. I mean, when I had H1N1, I think I got up to 100 overnight. I had a night sweat that night, and my temperature was normal in the morning. So I had a temperature for less than 12 hours, and I was lab confirmed. I mean, I definitely had the virus, about half of the people didn't have a fever. So in any event, they were using this to monitor, and it could very well be that that's what they're using on the home quarantine. They're asking what the temperature is. They can have people that are infected and don't have a fever, in fact, don't have anything. They're asymptomatic, and they've got the virus. And so, that's why a lot of this airport screening and this monitoring is not, you know, the ideal way to find community spread. And that's the reason they've switched over to these 5 locations. But unfortunately, unless I misunderstood the transcript, it will be up later tonight, and I'll reread it. But I'm pretty sure that they said they have not started the surveillance until next week. But that was one of the questions that that they were asked, and then on top of that, they were also asked about the Diamond Princess and positive cases, and they said they expected to have a number of additional positives
right.
over what they
well,
have now.
All right, so we got we're out of time basically, but real quick, what do we expect here? A story
well,
to break tomorrow, the next day. Of
well, there
somebody...
were there were two new cases in Northern California, one yesterday and one today in Humboldt County and in
Sacramento County.
So they are getting cases regularly. The one in Humboldt County was community, and I think that the numbers are going to start to increase because there's just too many other countries now. So people can be coming from South Korea or from
Singapore, a couple of
or
weeks,
Hong Kong.
2-3 weeks until the panic hits, if things go according to what they look like they're going to go.
I think it turned the corner today with Iran, that everybody knows that there's going to be
Italy.
One case after the other in the Middle
Ten
East.
10 towns in Italy, locked down.
And then you so it seems that we're getting more into the super spreaders stage. I don't know if that means the virus has changed yet. The virus sequences that have been made available so far really mm-hmm. don't show anything dramatic. But this is when it happened in with SARS, that the big change is 29 nucleotide deletion. It was first identified in the cases out of the Metropole Hotel, and frankly, it was all the cases after that. They were internationally. They all had the same mutation.
Okay.
So,
all right.
We'll see.
Henry?
So,
we will see. Thank you for another great week of reports. We'll have a lot to report Monday with Henry when he comes back and through the week. This is apparently poised
it's going
to
accelerate
to go.
As far as the development. Yeah, right. So I think there'll be a lot of news next week.
All right.
Okay, have a good weekend and talk to you then.
Thank you. Okay, Henry, good night.
Okay, take care.
All right, and thanks to all of you for being here. I hope you found these programs helpful. I don't know where else you can get some of the information we have here. That it's just as good as I can imagine it being, and just great work by Henry and Yoshi and Dick Allgaier, for that matter, and his viewers. All right. Plan ahead. Prepare now. Think about it this weekend. What are you going to do to get some food put away? You need to make those decisions. All right. Talk soon. Take care.